We are currently looking at events transitioning between the Old and New Testaments. And we are now commonly talking about a man that is right there at the beginning of the gospel story, and that is Herod the Great. We know that in the year 47 BC, Julius Caesar was invoking the details of this long-standing mutual assistance treaty between the Roman Republic and the Jewish people. And he supports Hyrcanus as high priest and ethnarch of the Jews. But he also is very much a rewarder of Hyrcanus's right-hand man, Antipater the Idumean, the father of Herod the Great. And he gives Antipater and his family the right to become Roman citizens. And not just that, he makes them immune to Roman taxes. And this is how Herod begins laying this unimaginable fortune that we'll watch him spend later. Herod is made the leader of Galilee by his dad. And his big brother, Phasaelus, is made the leader of the city of Jerusalem and of the immediate Judean region around Jerusalem. And so this is the way that 47 BC is progressing for that family. Now, not everybody's happy for them, though. First of all, the son of the late Aristobulus, who wanted the throne instead of his brother Hyrcanus, this son continues to object to Julius Caesar having anything to do with Hyrcanus and Antipater. And he rabble-rouses to try to get these guys in trouble all the time. And even though Julius Caesar says that this needs to stop, it continues to go on behind the scenes. Now, for Herod, this becomes a problem in that as soon as he takes over Galilee, the administration of Galilee, now he's 25 at the time, so keep that in your head, he begins killing off Roman gang leaders that have been terrorizing the region. And once this news gets back to Jerusalem, this becomes a wedge issue that people try to use against Herod and his brother and his father. And we end up with daily protests at the temple about how these Jewish gang leaders were actually murdered by Herod, that they were not given due process, that they were not as bad as was being reported. Their moms are making public statements and demanding that Herod be brought to justice. And so we have this record from the Antiquities of the Jews, book 14, chapter number 9, that describes how Herod is brought into some danger by all this response to his activities. And this is the way that some of the leaders were complaining to Hyrcanus about Herod and Phasaelus and Antipater. Quote, "How long will you be quiet under such actions as are now done? Or don't you see that Antipater and his sons have already seized upon the government, and that there is only the name of a king which is given to you? But do not suffer these things to be hidden from you, Nor do you think to escape danger by being so careless of yourself and of your kingdom. For Antipater and his sons are not now stewards of your affairs. Do not deceive yourself with such a notion. They are evidently absolute lords. For Herod, Antipater's son, has slain Hezekiah and those that were with him, and have thereby transgressed our law, which has forbidden to slay any man, even though he is a wicked man, unless he's first condemned to suffer death by the Sanhedrin. And yet hath he now been so insolent as to do this, and that without any authority from you. So this is the legal complaint that's being made by some of the Jewish leaders at Jerusalem that don't like Antipater's actions or his son's actions. And so the claim is made that Herod had not given due process to this Hezekiah and other thugs before he killed them. And so now he needs to be brought up on charges before the Sanhedrin. Well, long story short, you can go and read the whole thing yourself, but here's the shortened portion. Hyrcanus agrees that Herod can be put on trial for murder in front of the Sanhedrin, but he makes it very clear that he and Sextus Caesar of Syria both expect this young man, Herod, to be acquitted of the charges. So ethnarch Hyrcanus says, fine, you can put him on trial, but I want to make it very clear, you better find him innocent because he didn't do anything wrong. On the advice of his father, Herod came to Jerusalem from Galilee for this trial with a security detail that was large enough to protect him from an unruly mob, but not large enough as to seem that he were planning some sort of coup against ethnarch Hyrcanus. When Herod did arrive, he looked quite regal and didn't seem very humble at being summoned before the high court on murder charges. And since he was surrounded by his security detail, the prosecution of the case declined to go forward with their presentation, presumably because they were afraid for their lives by the security detail. One of the Sanhedrin members chided the others that they were about to acquit a proud young man who, quote, and this is straight from Josephus, will one day punish both you and your king himself also, end quote. And that does seem a little prophetic, doesn't it? When Hyrcanus saw that these comments had clearly swung the Sanhedrin toward condemning Herod to death, even though he'd warned them, don't you dare do this, he decided to adjourn the proceedings for the day, and then he advised Herod to get out of town, because he was pretty sure now that a guilty charge was going to be returned, and he wouldn't be able to protect him from that verdict. So Herod takes that advice, and he leaves and goes to Damascus, Syria, where he then began using his wealth and his favorable impression with Sextus Caesar to gain appointment by the Romans over all of southern Syria, which was under Roman control. And that would have included Samaria itself, the region of Samaria between Galilee and Judea. And so all that happens in the later part of 47. Now, he apparently stews over this. Remember, he's 25, and he feels that he'd been doing the right thing, and then he got mistreated. So he gets irritated by that, and now he's a powerful 25, maybe 26-year-old. And so in 46 BC, He leads his Syrian army back to Jerusalem with the specific intent to avenge himself on this Sanhedrin and to remove the weak-willed Hyrcanus from power, because he doesn't feel that Hyrcanus should have... he feels that Hyrcanus should have stood up for him. It was only the pleadings of his father and his brother that convinced him not to carry out this effective coup against Hyrcanus. So that's all that happened in 47 and 46. And then things kind of calm back down again for a while amongst the Jewish people. Then in 44 BC, we have another huge watershed event, the Ides of March, 15 March 44 BC. Julius Caesar is assassinated by a man named Cassius and Brutus, and because they considered him to be a threat to the continuation of the Roman Republic. They were probably correct, but the moment that they killed him, they triggered another civil war amongst the Romans. In 44 BC, Cassius went to his Senate-appointed province of Syria in order to raise an army in this upcoming civil war. And of course, that means he was in control of the region that included Judea. So he levied a tax of 700 talents upon the Jewish nation. Remember, a talent is about 6,000 days' wages. So we're talking about a lot of money here. Which Antipater, who's functioning as, you know, the administrator of all practical things going on in the kingdom, Hyrcanus is just pretty much taking care of high priest functions. He's more of a figurehead at this time. So Antipater divides this money up over seven regions to be raised. And then Herod, his son, he's the first to accomplish the collection of funds in Galilee. And so Cassius rewards Herod for that with control over all of Syria. So Herod the Great is, now he's not known by Herod the Great just yet, but Herod is known as being a man of action amongst the Romans and the Syrians. That's very clear at this time. Well, the civil war continues for the next couple of years. In 43, the sides are basically divided up this way. Octavian, the later Augustus, so keep that in mind. Octavian, Mark Anthony, and a guy by the name of Lepidus are on one side. They are the next triumvirate of the Roman Republic. And then on the other side of the civil war are the two assassins, Cassius and Brutus. Now Herod, because he is Cassius's governor of Syria, was expected to provide material support for his leader, Cassius, on the what will be the losing side of this civil war. And in return, though, listen to this. In return, Cassius promised to Herod the title King of the Jews once the war was over. So Cassius says, once we win, Herod, I'm going to make you the King of the Jews. And so that's planted in Herod's head at this point in 43. Now, what else is happening? A Jewish noble by the name of Malichus poisoned Antipater the Idumean during this period. So Herod's dad is poisoned to death by a Jewish noble. And Josephus has nothing but good things to say about this man that has been murdered in this fashion. This is his quotes from both the antiquities of the Jews and the wars of the Jews. And thus died Antipater, a man that had distinguished himself for piety and justice and love to his country. And then the other quote. He was a man, in other respects, active in the management of affairs, and one that recovered the government to Hyrcanus and preserved it in his hands. So as far as Josephus, the Jewish historian, was concerned, Antipater, the Idumean, was a hero of this time period and a good and apparently even godly man. Now, as you would expect, Herod wanted immediate vengeance for the poisoning of his father. But he was talked out of it by his older brother, Phasaelus, who was concerned that this would trigger a civil war among the Jews, like that which was already going on among the Romans, and that would not be good for the Jewish people. And so Herod agreed that that would be the case, and so for a while he complied. But he did write a letter to Cassius, and complained about the murder of his father. And he also knew that Cassius didn't like this Malichus guy that had already been doing things against Crassus. And so Cassius decided to take out Malichus. And so this operation occurred in the city of Tyre along the seashore. Malichus and Hyrcanus, the high priest and ethnarch of the Jews, they were walking along the ocean, along the Mediterranean seashore, to a dinner party that had been thrown by Herod, the governor of Syria. And Hyrcanus fainted whenever some Roman soldiers suddenly appeared and stabbed Malichus to death right in front of him. Now, when he revived from his faint, Hyrcanus expressed his relief that the assassination had been ordered by Crassus the Roman, rather than by Herod the Jew, or Herod the Idumean. Now, Felix, the brother of Malichus, immediately tried to get vengeance on Herod and Phasaelus by taking over a number of Judean fortresses, among them Masada. But he ends up being beaten back by the two brothers. The two brothers also had to fight off an invasion attempt by Antigonus, Hyrcanus's nephew. Remember, he's kind of that surviving son of the late usurper to the throne. Well, he kept thinking he could take over during all of this turmoil. He wanted to be high priest and ethnarch of Judea rather than his uncle. Now, Herod was particularly rewarded by Hyrcanus for his valor in the defense of the kingdom at this time by being invited to enter into a marriage betrothal contract with his granddaughter, Mariamne. So this is where Herod is asked to become a member of the extended Hasmonean family by marrying a princess in it. Josephus reports it this way in Antiquities, book 14, chapter 12. When was come to Jerusalem, Hyrcanus and the people put garlands about his head. So because they defended Jerusalem against this attempt to take it over by Antigonus, they were rewarded with this great big welcome party. And then in Wars of the Jews, book 1, chapter 11, and Josephus writes this. When Herod had fought against these in the avenues of Judea, he was conqueror in the battle. He drove away Antigonus and then returned to Jerusalem, beloved by everybody for the glorious action he'd done. For those who did not before favor him did join themselves to him now because of his marriage into the family of Hyrcanus. Now, it's not a marriage just yet. It's a betrothal. Back to the text. For as he had formerly married a wife out of his own country of no ignoble blood, who was called Doris, of whom he begat Antipater, so did he now marry Miriamne, the daughter of Alexander, the son of Aristobulus, and the granddaughter of Hyrcanus, and was become thereby a relation of the king. Now, it should be pointed out that as a Roman citizen, Herod is under Roman law, so he cannot be married to more than one woman at a time. So basically, he has to begin divorce proceedings against his wife Doris in order to marry Miriamne. And so that's going to take a little while to get all of that taken care of. So that's why the marriage contract is offered in 43, but it won't be consummated for a few more years. All right, that brings us then to October of 42 BC. That's when Cassius and Brutus commit suicide once they saw that they lost the Battle of Philippi to Mark Antony. So they realize they're done for, their civil war is over, so they kill themselves, and pretty much everything is finished now. But that means that Herod and his brother and their boss, Hyrcanus, the high priest and ethnarch of the Jews, they were on the losing side of the civil war of the Romans. And so they could come under penalty for that. So in 41 BC, Herod was among those high-ranking persons in the Middle East who presented themselves to Mark Antony at Ephesus, paying their respects to the victor of the Roman Civil War. He paid a large, unspecified sum of money in order to secure forgiveness for supporting the loser. So he offers to pay a huge war reparation because he was on the wrong side. Certain Jewish petitioners tried unsuccessfully at this time to convince Mark Antony to remove Herod and Phasaelus from their positions of authority within the Hyrcanus government. So people thought this would be a good time to get these guys expelled from their positions of authority, but they were wrong because Mark Antony actually likes them. And so he's willing to let bygones be bygones. The high priest Hyrcanus sent ambassadors to this meeting with crowns of gold for pretty much the same reason, to basically apologize, we are sorry we were on the wrong side. And he also requested that Jewish hostages and land taken by Cassius to ensure their compliance be returned. So basically, Hyrcanus is saying, look, we were under duress. We were forced to provide this support by hostages being taken and properties being taken. So here's our apology. We're paying this fine, but we'd like to have the people and the things taken from us returned now, please. Mark Antony issued several decrees at this time that were very favorable toward Hyrcanus and the Jewish people, and he pretty much blamed the whole turmoil on Cassius and Brutus. Later in that year, while Mark Antony was holding court at Antioch, Syria, Hyrcanus came to visit him. And during this time, there was a group of 100 Jewish leaders that once again came into Mark Antony's presence and asked him to remove Herod and Phasaelus from their positions of authority and just leave Hyrcanus as the ruler, high priest and ethnarch alone. Mark Antony responded by simply turning to Hyrcanus and asking him whom he thought was best qualified to oversee Jewish affairs, to which Hyrcanus replied these words, and this is a quote from Josephus, "Herod and his friends," end quote. So Mark Antony immediately declared that Herod and Phasaelus were now tetrarchs. That's ruler of a fourth part. That's a rank amongst the Romans that's immediately below ethnarch. So he promotes them to be immediately under Hyrcanus. When 15 of the petitioners vehemently objected, Mark Antony was about to have them executed on the spot, but Herod intervened and asked them not to do that. And then when there was a riot not too long after that, for the same reason, Mark Antony had those rioters put down with extreme prejudice. And interestingly enough, Herod and Hyrcanus turned around and paid for the funerals of the dead rioters and the medical treatment of the wounded. And so that is where we will take up the story next week when we get back into God's Word.